Take our advice. Don't look like shit.
Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to episode 128 of Rogue Startups, the GDpocalypser episode.
Oh, man. Dave, it's funny. I was listening to Startups for the Rest of Us this week on the way back from vacation, and I loved how Mike had all these like really interesting insights and strategies of things he was looking at with GDPR, and Rob was like, "Not my problem anymore." I have 300 yeah. people that are working on this as part of Lead Pages. I was like, "Oh, son of a bitch."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the perspective is a little bit different when you're sitting at the top, I guess.
Yeah.
It's good
yeah.
to be the king.
I guess. That's all I got to say. I guess. It's not all roses, I'm sure. But in this respect, there definitely are things that you and I, a lot of other people that we know in similar situations, are doing to get ready to be compliant with GDPR. We'll definitely talk about those today. But we should do some updates first. So how are things going with the business?
Well, at the moment, I am sitting on pins and needles waiting to hear back from the Shopify apps team. They haven't approved my app yet, but they haven't rejected it either. So when I did my first two submissions, there was a problem with the OAuth link that we weren't totally aware of, because the app – my developer was working on the app and he didn't have my test account. And I guess within my test account, once you create the app listing, then it kind of shows you a fake – app listing, but in there's a live button that says get the app, and you can use that to install on your test store.
Gotcha.
Neither of us really knew about that, and as a result, we didn't really test that, and that was a small problem for the first two submissions. But we turned it around really fast, but then we got kind of a nasty warning that went along with it saying, hey, if you do this to us again, we're going to put you at the back of the queue and we're going to delay your submission to give you time to address these issues. And I'm like, oh, hell, don't do that. So I submitted it again, and this time it was right, but I haven't heard anything since. So now I'm worried, you know, am I in that submission hell, or am I just being evaluated and it's all fine? I'm pretty sure I'd be able to see them doing an install of the app, because I would have an account sign up on my side and I'd get notifications of that, and I haven't gotten any of that. So, you know, stressing about that a little bit, and working on GDPR updates with my developer, who is now going to be dedicated for, unfortunately, the next month just putting in shit for GDPR.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I mean, that's lost time to me, you know?
There's no ROI on that. Zero.
There's zero. Well, that's not true. Maybe there's some ROI on it. I'm looking at it. Well, we can get into that in the whole GDPR updates episode today. But yeah, so that's where things are at with Recapture at the moment. And the plugins are nominal. How about you?
That's good. That's good. Yeah. So, things are chugging along. We had a really good month in March for Castos. Kind of everything was chugging along and firing on relatively all cylinders, which is really nice. But I think one of the things that we're realizing at this point is a bit of the bottleneck is supporting a larger group of customers. Like, we have more customers now, and I live 6 hours ahead of the East Coast time zone, and so I'm just not able to support customers myself as much as we want to. We brought on a support guy about a month ago, and he's definitely getting up to speed, but I would say it's my biggest challenge kind of in the business right now is how to onboard and train our new support guy to be able to handle a lot of really difficult things. I mean, we offer a lot of, I think, advanced support for WordPress users, our free WordPress users, because it's our biggest marketing channel. I mean, we get most of our users from WordPress.org.
Here,
so
here.
They deserve all the support we can give them, and we as a business want to help build and maintain that. But, you know, it's me kind of slinging around as much kind of hodgepodge knowledge as I have of the plugin and of podcasting and of WordPress. And to bring someone new into that is admittedly really tough. So I've been doing a few things that I don't know if people might find them helpful. So we've done kind of three things. So we're using Intercom, and we've been leaving a lot of notes for each other. So he leaves me a note if he doesn't understand something. I'll leave him a note on kind of a non-urgent ticket and say, hey, answer it like this, so he knows. So I think that's been helpful. And then we have started a weekly call where we go through things that he's seeing in support that he thinks we as a product team should know about. Maybe I'm stepping back 20% in terms of the support burden right now, so I'm not answering every ticket. So it's good for me and important for me to keep an eye on, an ear on, kind of what's going on with customers. So he's kind of giving me an update there. And then we're doing a little bit of like live training and troubleshooting and talking through aspects of podcasting and WordPress and the plugin and the hosting platform and stuff like that. So it's working out well. It's just a matter of me being a little bit patient, which I'm horrible at. So it's a new skill for me. But actually, I put out a thing on Twitter just before we started recording today, seeing if anybody has done this successfully, you know, bringing on support people and building a support team, and would want to talk about it on the show. I know you've done it, Dave, recently with your plugins, and we could definitely talk about this as an episode. But as it's my kind of big thing, I just want to talk about it with somebody who's done it, with someone else who's done it successfully, and steal some good ideas, maybe.
My idea is not good enough for you?
Yeah, your idea is good for me, but I've heard your story, and I want a magic bullet.
My story is boring. Yeah, I know. I get it. I'm not that interesting. I mean, that note thing that you're talking about in Intercom is exactly what I do back and forth with my support person in Help Scout.
Yeah.
So there's tickets that, you know, she'll get and be like, Dave, I've got no clue about this. What the heck is going on here? And so I'll try to give her some background, or she'll come to me with a specific question, and we use that note thing to exchange ticket-specific information on there. And I'd say it works pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, I think – I don't know that it would necessarily scale with a larger team unless you have some process in place to sort of control who looks at what tickets, because you could really get out of control if everybody's jumping in and contributing notes on a ticket. That would get really wacky.
No, yeah, yeah.
But I don't know that there's a lot of teams that would use Help Scout that way. So I don't think that's really I'm probably worrying about a use case that doesn't exist.
Yeah. I think the next step for us probably would be, you know, for you too, if you had to bring on another support person, would be just to do the same thing and then to build out like an internal knowledge base with all of that information, which would be really different than your public facing knowledge base, I would guess.
Yes, yes. Right now, so I'm using the whole support thing as an excuse to keep updating our existing knowledge base and improve. You know, our internal knowledge base right now really consists of the two of us running Text Expander, where we store a bunch of snippets of canned responses that we can give to customers when we know there's a certain issue that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, That works well enough for now, and it's dynamic enough. And when I go back in there, I can see things that she's added, and she can see things that I've edited. And it works just fine for that right now. But yes, if a team were to get larger, an internal support base would definitely be more relevant at that point. But just trying to keep an external support base up to date is a headache enough in and of itself. So, you know, I wouldn't double down on my work right now. That first one would suck trying to set that up.
Yeah, no, for sure. We're going to put that off as long as we can. But but I mean, I look at it as like an investment, because as soon as I know you and I've talked about you getting out of support has been so good for your productivity and moving the business forward. I look at like, I'm spending a lot of time in support, and it's really important because like, our conversion rate and our retention and our churn have all improved. But I can't do it forever. And I definitely can't do it as we get more and more customers. I'll just run out of time. So it has to get fixed at some point, even if it goes from like a good thing now to absolutely necessary in the future. It has to get off my plate at some point. So that's kind of my main focus there. And then with Sales Camp, we released our Stripe integration this week, which is really cool. So now we'll be able to track referrals that result in new paying customers. So before it was all like sharing and page views and things like that. that were kind of the goal of a referral program. And now the goal of a referral program can be a new paying customer, which is really cool to look at, like measuring the ROI of a referral campaign. So somebody comes in and says, okay, hey, you know, we're paying out $25 for a new customer we get, but our LTV is $250. This is great. You know, we'll just keep putting as much time and effort into this program as we can. So that's really cool. And we're getting some traction with a couple customers really looking hard at adopting this. So it's cool to see.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. I have that on the list of things for Recapture as a referral program, but developing my more obvious and organic channels, I think, is a primary focus here first for me. So,
yep. Yep. Makes sense. Makes sense. So, so the hot topic of the day, I think, I swear to God, I get an email about this every day from other SaaS companies that I either use or I'm on the email list for, is GDPR. And for anyone who's the ostrich with their head in the sand, GDPR is General Data Protection, Privacy Protection Regulation out of Europe that says you have to treat people's personally identifiable information much like you would their credit card information, basically. So you have to give them rights and access to it, and rights to not share or for you to keep their personal information. And for a lot of us in the SaaS world, this is kind of wreaking havoc with how we've kept data and kind of what we're planning to do going forward to be compliant with this rule, because the penalties are really stiff and they're coming up May 25th, right, Dave?
Yes, May 25th, 2018, the General Data Protection Regulation comes into effect in full force in all of its bloody glory. And yeah, I mean, all right, so, you know, we could spend some time talking about what is GDPR and the data processors and data controllers and all of that crap, but I think that's stuff that people can look up, or they probably heard a million times already, and we can put some of that stuff in the show notes. But, you know, I'd really like to actually spend some time kind of bitching about the edges of GDPR and the stuff that I think has been really poorly thought out.
Like IP address?
Well, okay, that's just one of 100 issues that I have with it at this point.
Yeah.
But, I mean, first of all, the one that just really gets in my craw is that we've got this law that the European Union is imposing that affects the entire world. And the first thing that everybody's like, you know, I'm a US business, why the hell do I care? And the answer is, it looks like we're all going to care eventually. But the fact that the Europeans are sort of imposing this unilaterally just doesn't sit well, I think, with businesses in general.
Yeah.
And with that said, I think as a small business, this sucks even more, because you're suddenly subject to all of these regulations that are, you know, if you start reading through the documentation of this thing, it's very much aimed at the Googles and the Facebooks and the Apples of the world. We're not that. We're just not there. But there's all this shit you have to comply with that, because they have to comply with it, you have to comply with it too. There's no tiering to say if you're a business of this that you can do these other things with it, or if you only have this many customers, then these are the things that you have to do. Like, all of it, it's all blanket right on top of you.
Mm-hmm.
And the fines, you know, are sort of unilateral across the board. You know, 4% of your global revenue, that could really have a significant impact on, you know, somebody like Google. But, you know, the minimum fine is still 20 million euros. I mean, that puts any small business that I know of immediately out of business.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, that just doesn't even make sense. There's nothing that tears that either. There's just a lot of ham-fisted shit about this law that pisses me off.
Leave it to the French to make some strong, bold decisions that they don't realize the ramifications of ahead of time. But, no, I mean, I think
insert historical reference here.
No, insert the trains are on strike. The train system that's government run is on strike right now for the next 3 months. They're on strike. Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No, that's great. SCNF is on strike 2 days out of every five for the next 3 months. Yep, it's amazing.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
2 days out of every five. That's a really effective strike. You know, that really sticks it to the man.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just enough to piss everyone off, but not enough to like, not like the air traffic controllers right back in the day, you know, and then Kennedy just like, well, fuck you all. Like, you can just go find a new job. And he fired all of them. Right. But yeah, when you're working 2 days out of five, then Macron here can't say, oh, you know, go get a new job because they are working some and providing a necessary service. But anyways, no, I do agree that, you know, I think on the surface, the spirit of GDPR is sound, right? Like, everybody wants more confidence in the services they're using, that they're not going to get into a situation like Facebook is in recently. To be honest, I don't know all the details of what happened or is alleged to happen with Facebook, but needless to say, I think most people would agree that they might not be the best stewards of your personal information, right? And so I think things like GDPR is here to provide like reassurances to the general public, just like things like SSL certificates did whatever 15 years ago with people adopting credit card usage online, right? So like, I think in the long run, we'll all be more comfortable with how our data is managed on and retained and shared online, and probably we'll kind of use the internet more for business and things like that. So that's cool. And I think the spirit of it is good. I agree that if this was done in the US, they would definitely have like a small business exemption. And the fact that they don't and are trying to impose this on everyone, whether you're a European business or not, is really short-sighted. And I think that's the thing that's pissing a lot of people off is people in the US say, I'm not a European business. I have whatever, 2% of my customers are European, but now I have to go through a month of development time and writing documents and communicating with customers and other vendors and all this stuff to be compliant for what might not be worth it in the short term, at least. So that's the thing.
Or,
that I think
or even worse,
sucks.
Where they just basically say, I'm going to have to say no to these 2% of my customers. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the main motivation that I have right now as a US business. I have a significant number of customers on recapture. That's double digit percent that are EU customers. And if I don't comply with GDPR, they will go somewhere else. I have had that in exactly those terms in emails of people asking me, are you going to be GDPR compliant? Because if you aren't, I have to find a service that is.
Yeah.
Because they're just scared that it comes back and whacks them. So
yeah,
and I
yeah,
get
yeah.
that. Yeah.
Let me ask you about your plugins. I know we have a fair amount of WordPress people on here. I got this email from someone for one of our plugin modules. Because you're collecting data about my podcast statistics, we need to have a data privacy agreement in place. I'm not collecting anything, right? Like the plugin collects data on a person's WordPress site, but we don't collect any data. I can't believe I have to be GDPR compliant for my plugin that you install on your site. You collect that data and retain it because I don't ever see that data, right?
No. A data processing agreement. So I think this person is misunderstanding what a data processing agreement really does. A data processing agreement applies, as I understand it. I am not a lawyer. Here's your big fat asterisk. Go talk to somebody who's really knowledgeable about
Here's
this stuff.
And
talk to somebody who gets paid to do this for a living if you really want the official authoritative word on it. But my read of GDPR and the data processing agreements that you get with data processors and data controllers is if they have your data, so that would mean you would physically have to be in possession of their data.
Right.
However, you are not in physical possession of their data. It's on their damn server. Your plugin collected it, but it is still their data and it is in their possession.
Yep.
So as I understand it, DPA does not apply in that case.
Yeah.
Who the hell knows if it really does or not, because none of this has been tested in a court. So maybe somebody would come back and say, well, you're the one who controls the software and this person is just a layperson. How would they know how to get their data out? Blah, blah, blah. You know, who knows? You might have a technologically inept court that decides that sort of a boneheaded rule and you get screwed by it. But, you know, none of this has been tested yet. So we don't really know. Yeah. But that's my understanding. The DPA wouldn't really be applicable there. And you could go back and tell somebody that right now.
Yeah.
Now, in my case with Recapture, I am holding on to their customers' data. I mean, people go to their stores, they click on stuff, and they put it in their carts. That data comes to me. I now have it. I am a data processor and a data controller. So companies are allowed to sign a DPA with me. And the ones that are, you know, paranoid about it, I'm going to offer them the option of doing so. And I'm trying to set up – that's one of the things that we're doing for our GDPR compliance is to have an automated thing where they can have an e-signed version of the DPA without me having to interact with them.
Oh, that's great.
So they'll just – yeah, they'll just automatically get one. It's templatized. I totally stole this idea from Postmark. Go Postmark. You guys rock. And yeah, that's just what I'm going to do because I can't do those on a one-off basis. You know, I'm going to have a policy that says I'm small business. I can't afford a lawyer. Every time somebody wants to sign a DPA, I can't sign your custom DPA. You're going to get my standard DPA. And that's mm-hmm. what I have available because I'm, you know, Joe tiny guy in the DPA world, in the GDPR world. So that's what you get.
Yeah. And where did you get the template from Postmark? They shared it with you?
Yeah, they have a template that's available on there, so I'm using that template.
Yeah.
I'm getting it reviewed and fixed up and all that good stuff. So, you know, I put the expense in one time to say, here's the one that applies to my business.
Mm-hmm.
And now here you can sign that template agreement, and that's it. You got it. Done.
Yeah, it's interesting. So we I guess I have experiences with GDPR across each of my businesses at this point. So the simplest one I think is Podcast Motor. We don't collect really any personally identifiable information from our customers. We are doing some of the normal stuff that people are doing for like opt-in versus the assumed opt-in for things like marketing. So like when somebody signs up for our newsletter, we're going to have to add like a little widget that says, hey, we're just going to track you, blah, blah, blah. Click here
clear and express consent. That's one of the things
instead of implied. So we're doing that. We had a customer, like a big funded startup, sign up at Podcast Motor about a month ago, and their business is right square in the middle of the crosshairs and their European business of GDPR. So they had attorneys calling us and all this kind of stuff. So we went through the gamut of like what we do and kind of data we hold and stuff like that. All that really came of it is we have some policies in place for how long we keep the raw file data that we get from our customers. And that was about all we had to do. I think as a business, we don't really collect any data about our customers and everything. Our billing information goes to Stripe, and that's really it. But as far as like when you and I record a podcast episode and we upload it and then our team downloads it to their computers, then what happens and how long do people retain it and what's our policy there? So we wrote a couple policies that I shared with our team and are published online and stuff like that. So that was Podcast Motor. For Castos, we're in the process of developing disclosures about the type of information we collect about podcast listeners for our analytics program, because we will collect and do collect IP address, which is about the only personally identifiable thing. And we'll, you know, be able to say, yes, if you want to delete all of your information, you can, which is crazy, but you can. And then just kind of declaring what we do there. And we'll have to get a data processing agreement in place. And then for Sales Camp, a lot of the same things, but a lot more in line with what you're doing with Recapture, where we're going to be collecting things like email addresses, IP address, information hooking into Stripe, and like Stripe customer IDs that we'll be retaining. So we're going to have to put like a lot more work into that. But I think, you know, something that I've been seeing here and trying to find the silver lining of this a little bit is I've seen a lot of content. Obviously, you and I are creating content around this as part of the podcast, but I've seen a lot of blog posts in the kind of affiliate and referral and marketing tech space about GDPR these days. And I think it's a little bit like the comparison page that we talked about, geez, I don't know, a year ago. Like, if you're not doing the comparison page of like, how does Castos, you know, compare to SoundCloud, that you might be missing out. I think if you're not going to publish a GDPR blog post and outline your roadmap and the things that you do and that you don't do and the disclosures and agreements that you have in place. If you're not publishing that and sharing it with your audience, you might be missing the mark, because your competitors are going to do it. And your competitors it are going to give your customers or potential customers a lot more confidence in what they're doing and the fact that they know what the hell they're doing and take it seriously. So I think that if anybody's not putting something out there about it, then they're probably missing the mark. I mean, we haven't put anything out yet, but we're going to be publishing a blog post specifically for SalesCamp, because it's kind of our most GDPR sensitive, because we are a European business, probably next week. So,
yeah, somebody had tweeted about this, and I want to say it was Patrick McKenzie, but I'd have to go back and look. That GDPR is really – it's not – if you look at GDPR as this big headache and pain in the ass that we all have to comply with, and that it's just this thing that's an obstacle in your way, that's the wrong way to look at it. Instead, look at GDPR as an opportunity to differentiate yourself from the field.
Yeah.
And in fact, one of the things that I did in my Shopify listing is I actually put, are you GDPR compliant? Because I will bet you dollars to donuts that people in the EU are going to start searching in the Shopify app store for certain things GDPR.
Yeah.
To make sure that you're compliant. So if you don't state that in there, then you are going to, you know, not necessarily be at the top of their list of consideration.
Yeah.
So I'm using it from the standpoint of how can I retain customers and how can I make those customers that are affected by GDPR want to do business with me over my competitors. Now, it turns out that in the email marketing space, there's huge impact here. So like all the big guys are doing something about this. You just don't see any of them ignoring it at all, which you would totally expect that. But my guess is, if you're a small guy and you're not paying attention to GDPR here, you are truly missing out. Either all your competitors are doing it, like you said, and you're not, so you look like the idiot. Or maybe your competitors are doing it, but they're not being really loud about it. Like, go out there, trumpet the fact that you are, you know, you take privacy seriously for your customers. And you can even say, it doesn't matter whether you live in the EU, we apply these universally to everybody in the United States. Which, by the way, I don't know if you saw this. I just saw this pop up on Ars Technica the other day, Tuesday of this week, which would be April 10th, 2018. There is a proposal from two Democratic senators from something called the Consent Act, Customer Online Notification for Stopping Edge Provider Network Transgressions. Dumbest, you know, it's the second dumbest acronym I've ever heard after PECR. you know, that was the European one that preceded GDPR. But basically, they're coming up with GDPR for the United States. And maybe it doesn't pass this session. Maybe it doesn't pass next session. It's going to pass eventually. I
guarantee you Zuckerberg is in Congress today talking about what they're doing. I guarantee you this will pass soon.
Yeah, this stuff right now is at the top and front and center of everybody's attention. So all the Republican and Democratic senators and representatives that are out there in the U.S. are probably getting hammered about this stuff, and they need to do something about it.
Yeah.
And guess what? They're going to do something that's going to look a little or a lot or completely like GDPR. And so if you are already compliant with GDPR, you are already light years ahead of everybody else. So that's the way I am looking at it right now.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think the thing about talking about this all coming to the U.S. is the Europe, we all will learn a lot from what GDPR and the Europeans are putting out there. And it might sort of suck and it might not be exactly right. But yeah, like you said, you're going to be, even if you're close to compliant, you're going to be light years ahead of anybody who chooses to kind of put their head in the sand now about this, when eventually the U.S. will come around and say, okay, everybody has to do this with customer data or disclose that or give opt-ins or outs or, you know, forget me options and all this kind of stuff. And I think that, I don't know, man, it definitely seems like it's the right thing to do. It's definitely happening and going to happen. And so I think as much as we look at this as an opportunity to differentiate ourselves and stand out a little bit, or at least a good way and good opportunity to get in front of our customers and say, hey, this is what we're doing as a business to make sure your life is not a pain in the ass because of us, right? Because that's, I mean, a lot of people are looking at this and saying, like, I use this email provider and they have not assured me they're going to be GDPR compliant. So I'm looking for another one. So I don't know. I mean, if you're not, if you're not getting ahead of that, then your customers might be saying that, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, those emails I received very early on obviously expressed that concern in a very direct and painful way. Like, that made me stand up and pay attention when one of them said, yeah, I can't use you anymore if you're not GDPR compliant. I'm like, oh, shit, you're in the UK. How many customers do I have in the UK? Oh, shit, that's not going to work for me. No. Yes, of course I'm going to be GDPR compliant. We're working on it right now. Here's my page. I just updated it 5 minutes ago. Right. Here it is. Yeah. I mean, it's that kind of a response. And, you know,
And it's not like a all or nothing on May 25th, right? I mean, I think a lot of us will at least have the – this is how I plan on it, right? We will definitely have the public-facing policies and disclosures in place and say – if you have questions or you have or want to request all of your data to be deleted or whatever, send an email to this address and it will be taken care of in 48 hours. And I think that, along with some of the agreements that you can put in place and just have publicly available on your site, are going to get you a lot of the way. I mean, I think you need and can build some things into your app and your opt-in process and stuff like that, but it doesn't all have to be 100% done on day one.
No. And there's stuff you could even be doing right now that is literally code neutral. So, like, for example, just going and updating your privacy policy. Yeah. And, you know, let's link our – I presume you've already updated your privacy policy. Let's link all of our privacy policies up that we've done for GDPR on the show notes here. So you can just look at these as examples of what you can do. I think I spent maybe an hour and a half on mine, just updating it, make sure it was clear. I also signed up for Privacy Shield here in the United States, which is a whole nightmare unto itself and some unnecessary expense. But I just wanted to go to that extra level to say, I'm part of the Privacy Shield program. Here's my ID. You can look me up on the Privacy Shield site. You can clearly see I take this seriously. You know, it cost me several hundred dollars to get that, but you know, I felt it was worth it to maintain the trust of my customers. And, you know, if you're in a business where you have a lot of personal information of customers, I think you should probably spend the time and do that as well.
Yeah.
You know, writing down what it is you're going to do for data breaches and what, you know, what are your data retention policies? Like, we didn't really have one at Recapture until this came along. And I was like, all right, well, I guess we need to sit down and think about it.
Right.
And you got to do things like get rid of old backups, you know, make sure you have basic security. I mean, almost every SaaS vendor should be doing this stuff already. HTTPS, and are you encrypting your passwords, and are you transmitting the data securely, and you storing the backups securely, and yada, yada, yada. You know, these are kind of basic and kind of obvious, but this is also part of GDPR. Like, there's a law that now says you have to do all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And some of that stuff is just plain common sense, smart business practices. If you're not doing it, then you ought to do it. And, you know, do things like document all the third-party vendors that you have available on your site and what's their GDPR compliance. So I've had to send out emails to every single vendor that I use, Intercom, Drip, Help Scout, yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, okay, well, what's your GDPR compliance look like right now? And a lot of them have sent me back a similar link to the page that I had. Like, here's our roadmap. We're going to be compliant by May 25th. Here's what we're working on right now. We're not there yet, but we plan to be by May 25th, which probably means that they're going to be just like us, still scrambling to get some of the details in there.
May 24th, they'll be up all night, pulling an all-nighter. Yeah. Yeah. No, for sure. I've talked to a few other people, you know, in our space, and I think the consensus is actually pretty similar. I mean, it is a consensus. Is they're getting a handful of things in place from a tech perspective. They're getting a lot of policies and disclosures and communications in place. And I think if you're doing that, you're on the right path, and you're going to be covered with your customers and relatively covered sort of legally and from a compliance standpoint, especially if you're a U.S. company. I think the chance of a small U.S. company getting hammered by GDPR is really low. I think, like you said, they're going to go out.
Here's another big fat asterisk. We're not lawyers.
Right. No, but I mean,
it's not a promise. You might get whacked by GDPR. The likelihood is low. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Don't come back and sue us. We're very poor. Sorry.
But I mean, they're going to go after the mid to upper market easy wins, right? I mean, they're just like any attorney or legal entity. So,
but yeah, if you're making less than $1 million ARR, you literally are not that interesting to any large government. You know, as long as you're paying your taxes, I don't think they're going to really care. Like, we're just not the subjects of what GDPR is intended to crack down on.
Yeah.
Like I said earlier in the podcast, it's going after the Googles and the Facebooks and the Amazons and all of those guys. And the ones that are in between us and them, those are more interesting targets because they're going to be more likely to be able to pay that fine and they're going to have more of a public face. You know, you and your 100 customers – are you likely to raise the ire of the GDPR? If you've done the basic stuff, I think the GDPR is going to be like, meh, you know.
Good enough for now, yeah.
They've done enough, and, you know, they've obviously done something to try to be compliant, but they're making so little, it wouldn't even be worth our time to go pursue this. Like, it would cost more to put somebody on this case than it would for what we would recover from them, because 20 million euros is not going to happen.
Right, right.
So that's my sense of this, and all of this has yet to be tested in a court, so that's another open question. But yeah, I think that just becoming compliant is a way to differentiate yourself, a way to look better as a small business, that you're serious about privacy, and, you know, just being a good online citizen, right?
Yep. Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, I think overall it's a fair amount of questions and uncertainty. Like you said, some of the things we don't know. None of it's been tested in court. But it's also just a bit of kind of busy work, maybe some development dollars to get your app and your data privacy and retention and updates and backups and things like that systematized and more compliant. But really, I think the big point for me is if you're not talking about it with your customers and your audience, you're missing a big opportunity and you're going to look like shit to your potential customers and your existing customers, because it's a huge deal if you're a European business. And so if you're not making life easier for your existing and potential customers, that's the thing you definitely need to look at it as like the silver lining. It's like, with a little bit of work, I have a chance to make my customers' lives really easy. And that's kind of that's the upside, probably.
Yep. Yeah. So take our advice. Don't look like shit.
Don't look like shit. Don't look like shit. And we'd love, yeah. No, so I'd love to hear, I mean, this is, you and I, you're a very, very small part of what people in our world are doing for GDPR. I'd love to hear what other people are doing. Shoot us a message, podcast@RogueStartups, or hit us up on Twitter @RogueStartups. And Dave, did you want to give an update on the MicroConf Rogue Startups meetup?
Absolutely. So I've gotten some interest on this. So here is the plan. I am going to be at the MicroConf Starter Growth Combo Party. So it's the kickoff party for Starter, and it's the wrap-up party for Growth. I'm going to be standing around. I have a plan to wear a white baseball cap with a green R on it. That's the Recapture logo. So if you are a Rogue Startups listener, that's our meetup. Come find the tall, balding dude with the white baseball cap and a green R on it. That's me. Come hang out. I'll buy you a drink. We'll chat. I'll get to know everybody who's listening to Rogue Startups and find out what you're doing in your business and what's working and what's not. That's what MicroConf is all about. So I'm looking forward to it.
The drinks are free, Dave, right? Come on.
No, actually, they're not. No, sadly, they're not.
Oh, you need to come to Europe. The drinks are free in Europe.
See, they've just got better. Yeah, they have better bars in Europe. I, you know, this has been a constant headache of mine about MicroConf in Vegas, is that you're subjected to the same 7 shitty beers every year. And they're not like – none of them are microbrew beers, you know.
It's Heineken and Amstel and all this shit.
It's Heineken and Corona and Bud and Coors, and you're like
– goat piss. Yeah.
Yeah. So every year for me, it's like, yes, I'll have a Corona with lime. Yes, I'll have another Corona with lime. Why, yes, I would like a third Corona with lime. and that's it, you know. And apparently it's the Tropicana, and they've had some contract, and that's all the beer they could sell. I'm like, that's really
amazing.
Lame.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. Awesome. Well, so you're 2 weeks away from MicroConf, is that right?
A little more than two weeks. Point. So, okay. Yeah. So everybody get ready for MicroConf. Start gearing up for who you want to chat with, and please come to the Rogue Startups meetup during the growth wrap-up starter kickoff party there, and look for the balding guy in the white baseball cap.
Awesome. Awesome. If you have any questions or feedback for us, shoot us a message, podcast@RogueStartups. And if you're enjoying the show, we'd love a review in iTunes. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to RogueStartups.com to learn more.